Today on The Grave Talks, Aaron G. Thompson, about the AI of the afterlife. Aaron Thompson sees the world of the paranormal in a very different and compelling light than most others as an afterlife researcher. For over 20 years, he's taken a very scientific approach to better understand the supernatural, yet an approach that doesn't dismiss any belief system, but rather seems to meld everything together in a way that just makes sense. We last spoke right before the pandemic of 2020. Today, he joins us again for a three-part conversation about the afterlife.
How was reception on that? I think I reached out to you at one point because I was looking for when you drop it because all the craziness started happening.
It was great. I mean, it was one of those things. A lot of people kind of started going to podcasts even more during the pandemic, even though their routines were kind of mixed up. But a lot of people found that our conversation very interesting. And there were so many things in that conversation. And I just listened to it again just to kind of refresh myself because it's been a couple years. It was like, oh, there were so many concepts in there that I have brought up over the last 2 years to other guests that you had kind of, I guess, would say enlightened me on. And just angles of the ghost family tree that I'd never really considered. Things like the idea of us creating our own ghosts, of the energy of itself creating its own almost intelligence. And those are all areas I'd love to dive deeper into on today's show, because some of those things were things that we touched on in the last couple of parts. But it was very, very fascinating. And I'm very curious to hear from you. It's been about 2 years. We've gone through a global pandemic since we last talked. What has research life been like for you over the last, 2 years?
It's interesting because it kind of put us all in a different place, you know, over the last 2 years, right when the pandemic started, and of course, I guess post start of that. Everyone, it kind of rocked everyone's world. For me specifically, I decided to get off of social media quite a bit, and I found a lot of peace with that and just kind of keep it in the hustle. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I didn't stop the research.
Yeah.
I'm trying to coin the phrase because, you know, some people are like, oh, hey, well, welcome back. Good to hear from you. You know, and I'm kind of popping up here and there on social media again. Mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, you know, I glow in the dark. Come on. Let's, you know, coin the phrase like, hey, I'm still moving, even if I'm silent. It's been interesting. I just took my research a lot more personal, less documented. I just kind of wanted to get, my practice in gear. And I knew at one point I'll be able to start documenting this again on a more, secure, I guess, level. But I just hustled with everything that life has to offer, and including, of course, afterlife research, which I did a couple. I did a documentary. It was a YouTube show, and it was received really well. And that was about the end of 2020. Filmmaker friend of mine was doing this thing. I was passing through the state, the area. He's like, hey, stop by. I need a host. I'm like, cool. So I did that. That was fun. I just kind of kept plugging along. And I did my first, I did some talks with my first big talk back into the world last year. September, October. Mm-hmm. It's all kind of a blur sometimes, but it was in Nevada, so they flew me out. It was a super cool location, super cool event. Mind you, I was exhausted, not necessarily with the flight and everything, just with hustling and doing what I do in the field here and practicing, my methods behind the scenes, that and kind of coming out to the, you know, kind of coming out and speaking to the world again. it was exhausting for me. There's a video online somewhere, and you almost see it on my face, like the weight. Like I'm like, mm-hmm. given my stuff, but I'm so. I think there's moments where I'm just regurgitating like top level conversation to enthusiasts and folks that got it. But the audience was like dead silent. Like they're asking questions on every other group.
Yeah.
And there's a large audience and I'm asking if I had any questions at the end. No one had questions. and then everyone just roared. I mean, it was a really a lot of clap, a lot of applause. So that was cool. And people came to my booth afterwards and go, "Hey, why don't you ask any questions?" You ask questions on every other panel.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I didn't know, you know, I took it positive, but it was one of those, how do I take this? I'll take it positive. I choose. He says, it seemed like you knew all the answers, which I want to go straight out and say, no, that's not the case. I feel very plausible buildups, but always room for improvement. I'm confident and convicted in my practice and my work. And, you know, I do this for the large scheme of afterlife and ghost hunting in general. But by all means, you know, ask questions, challenge me type scenarios. Mm-hmm. But he really enjoyed, further said, he really enjoyed my conversation. So that's cool to hear.
So when you did the speaking event late last year, what was the focus? What were some of the things that you talked about that obviously intrigued people to the point of, I don't have any questions, but I get it because half the time when we're talking and I ask you a question, I know like this is going to be a long form question. So I get why it might be kind of difficult to do sometimes in a live setting. But tell me, I mean, what was the focus? What were you trying to communicate at that event last year?
Well, when I got there, I thought I had a little bit longer of a time, which is probably the best method to give me yeah. moments. But I had 15 minutes and, you know, I respected that time block, which was fine. So I had a focus fire, and it was pretty much my, build up that I started. I remember speaking with you, you know, last time we spoke, you were the first person that I kind of unlocked this new idea, with. Before that, no one's really heard, kind of my angle on that, and I've just sharpened it throughout the time frame,
yeah.
And either got more convicted with one way or altered another way just to fit an overall narrative that makes sense with science and kind of the overall scheme of afterlife.
Why don't you refresh the audience on kind of what that angle is and what some of those points are?
Well, there's a study that I'm coining, throwing out there called Echo Terrestrial Cosmic. I changed the name. It's Echo Terrestrial Cosmic Mechanics. It used to be called Echo. I'm sorry. I'm getting the words, the phrase wrong. It used to be called Echo Terrestrial Quantum Mechanics.
Yes.
And then
yes.
I changed it to Echo Cosmical Ether Mechanics.
Okay.
So that's the name.
Okay. Yep. Even more fancy and would work good on the side of a bag of chips. New Doritos. Echo cosmic, what is it?
Echo cosmical, like think of the
cosmical
the gene from Aladdin. Cosmical,
yes.
Yeah, something like that. But and then it's ether mechanics instead of quantum mechanics.
New
and ether,
okay.
They're cousins, you know.
Yes, yes.
Quantum and ether.
Okay.
Ether is kind of that dead man's zone for scientists.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the books don't like to go that way. Because of the fantastical, I guess, buildups that are very potential. But the thing I like, ether, and speaking further with some scientists, ether makes more sense to the world in general. I'm not going to say to ghost hunting or afterlife, to the world, because they, unlike quantum mechanics also has a name, quantum theory. They're really nice theory here, the string theory here. I mean, they're phenomenal theories. Hell, I might even be throwing out some theories, at least that people assume are complete, you know,
mm-hmm.
good buildups, when I do have some science tied into a lot of what I speak about. Ether mechanics actually has some promising experiments that visualize the conversation that I'm trying to bring to the table. So that's what I like. That's the first time we're really digging into a quantum mechanic area and showing someone something, which rocks rocks, you know, people's heads. It's a crazy zone.
Explain to us more about what Echo Cosmical Ether Mechanics is all about. What are the principles of it, and how does it apply to the paranormal?
Thank you. Yeah, Tony. You know, I love the question because there is a lot to the word. I just didn't make up a fancy word and say, "Hey, it sounds good."
It is a good Echo. One, though.
Yeah, you know, I do dig it. It took me quite a while to really figure out what I'm talking about, because I know I'm not digging into this. It's not traditional ghost hunting. You know, I just don't want to call it, you know, it's after I've researched, but it's the reason of why ghosts. I want the mechanic behind it.
Sure.
And so that's what I've always looked for. So Echo is just that. We run into haunted locations that seemingly have an echo scenario where it's replaying the past and more of a haunting again scenario. Mm-hmm. So those are echoes. We seem to get a lot of echoes, whether they're disembodied voices, they're EVP, you know, other type of reads that are considered a phenomena. Mm-hmm. So Echo really displays the idea of the reverberate of, can't speak, the echo effect.
Okay.
Then a cosmical, of course, when I had a terrestrial, I was looking small. I mean, I was, you know, start small and work your way up. So terrestrial basically meant just Earth, you know, just things that complement what we're doing as a whole, as a community, within our box. But then I realized it's a lot more out of the box, and even the whole buildup's really out of the box. So terrestrial, it makes a lot more sense terrestrial. And I'll give you an example. Prayer is about the best example you could think of. And you can call it meditation, call it good vibes, call it well wishes. Mm-hmm. I don't have an established religion that I follow. I follow data, try to, you know, bridge science the best I can. I don't want to use the word logic because it has some discerning, you know, words sometimes. But, you know, I try to make things as grounded as possible. And prayer absolutely makes sense in the context. And, you know, even practicing in a couple experiments I was able to repeat, there's been impact, invisible impact, where the case may be. There seems to be a subatomic particle connectivity, almost like a giant telephone game. So whether you pray, you wish good vibes, you meditate, you do some form of meditation, it's all the same tomato tomato. It's what vibes are you putting out there, and what conviction do you have behind those wiggles, so those you know, those connections. And it sends out the data, and it can be, again, terrestrial. Or not terrestrial. Well, yeah, it can be, but cosmical. It's wide. It's everywhere. Everything's connected. So it depends on where you want to make that call, and explains UFO folks. You know, similar concept. They use similar devices we use, but I use it. I get ghosts. They use it. They get UFOs. They're calling. So the fascinating thing with that is, if you think about it in more of a, I don't know what term to put this out there, but I'll let someone listening choose what word they would like to utilize. Music. Music is a form of prayer, especially when you're singing in your head. You're vibing, you know, people say. They say music's my religion. You hear that often. Some people feel really good with some music. Well, guess what? You're putting that in your algorithm. You're shooting it out, and you're getting feedback. Things are happening in your world because it's music, because you're actually utilizing that music as a form of prayer or meditation. Same concept. It's just what avenue do you want to use? Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, the cosmical aspect. And the last part, ether mechanics. To go to mechanics, the last word first. Again, I'm always looking at the mechanics of why something does something. And I feel that's what all researchers in the field, specifically ghost hunting and paranormal investigating, well, again, like the ghost hunting, should do. They should ask, you know, well, why is it doing that? Ether, again, the condition of ether that utilizes some experiments that I'll be pursuing in the future on a more progressive level, it produces these results that science said could never be done. And it's just super fascinating, terrifying to some people. And there are folks, this is a unique buildup because I'm not only challenging people's mindsets, I'm breaking people's values, or potentially if they choose to take offense, because I'm directly saying that when you pass away, you're perfectly fine. You get sucked up into this great one consciousness, whatever we want to call it, mass consciousness scenario. You have no biology that dictates your emotions. So now your love, your hate, all that stuff, it's gone. It's void. You don't take your lungs with you. Why would we take our lobes that control our highs and lows? It's irrational. Well, as a human, as a Homo sapien grouping, we wanted to provide value to why we're here. And it was easy to utilize these systems and go by these systems, because we're a very system-based race, I could say. And if I would pinpoint a value or say, hey, meaning of life, with this buildup, I'll go as bold as saying love, emotions. If we are void of emotions past our departure of our vessel, leaving echoes, right? Leaving the imprint of once was that can get smarter. Then what if love, you know, all the emotions, but focus on love. What if that's the meaning, you know, to really feel that, feel the wind and to just take these moments and breathe it in. Yeah. Like, I'm cool with that. Even if I'm wrong, cool with that.
I mean, it's always, you know, it's been said, you know, it's like, well, positive attracts positive, negative attracts negative. And, you know, emotionally, it seems to do that. And logically, it seems to make sense. You're surrounding yourself with positive people, positive things. You're doing positive things. You're going to mentally be in a better state rather than you're surrounding yourself with negative people doing negative type things that will also pull you down emotionally.
And the funny thing with...
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the funny thing with that is, yeah, I agree with you with the positive and positive, but I don't feel through my data that the, whatever we want to call it, the energy, the mass consciousness, or the flow, I don't feel that it recognizes negative energy. At that point, I believe it's all subjective. It's all, and it's always been subjective, mm-hmm. On what you choose to do. This perspective, right? It's what's your value? Is it your culture? Is it your skin tone? Is it your job? Is it your family? Like, what is it? Is it your truck? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your value? It's all subjective. And the negative stuff, it's like the Eeyore, like nobody cares anyhow. Mm-hmm. That can be flipped really quick with just a narrative that supports a positive behavior. Mm-hmm. I don't think people get worse and worse and worse and worse. I think it stays at a line, and it's just subjective to, oh, I guess this happened to me. Why not? Blah, 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 blah. When really it's just neutral. They just got to pop it into gear. Yeah, I don't know. That's
interesting. Instead of, you know, there's like the positives and the negatives. You're saying essentially, if I'm understanding right, if you're in a negative space, you're in neutral. You're at a zero. You can't go any lower than zero. You can only go up from there. You can't go to like a negative 20 and then get yourself up to zero. Zero is where it's at, and you just kind of keep trudging along at zero until you find the situation or whatever you need to pull yourself up into positive.
Yeah, and we always dip into, I know a lot of adults, a lot of humans, you know, we go through moments of depression, whether they're blinks or they're more severe. Mm-hmm. And that's the biology kicking in, and that's our values being impacted, and our concerns, our insecurities, our worries. So it's a lot of that emotional state. It's a lot of the world, the environment that we suppose needs to happen. Instead of owning what we can own in our box, we try to assist other people to be happy, but they're never going to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, you got to focus on yourself. But yeah, I think in times we dip to that zero, but a lot of us can go right back up to 1,000 because our normalcy is we like to smile, you know, we like to feel good. Mm-hmm. We like to eat pizza.
Sure. Well, what is it when someone is perpetually staying at essentially zero? And that is obviously off-putting to those who want to be in a better place. And I mean, everyone, for the most part, I think, you know, you want to try and help your fellow human get up and get something positive going on in your life so they're not stuck there. But some people seem to just cling to the zero and never take the effort or give the effort, want to experience going further. it's a very troubling thing when something like that is going on. And, you know, some people will use the term, it's like those are your demons. They're stuck in their demons. And I'm not saying literally demonic or they're possessed, but it seems that many can get stuck in those ruts. Is there something to that of where, you know, can that go more negative? Because some folks, I'd say you're like at a negative 50. You know, and you got a lot of ways to go up to even get to zero. But it's an interesting way to look at it, though, is like maybe you're just kind of, it's like driving with a flat tire. You keep going. Yeah. It's going to keep doing the same shit. It's just going to get more dramatic and louder, but you still have flat tires.
Exactly. And, you know, the flat tire store, I remember it was 2021 April-ish or something like that. I was on an hour and a half journey back to my house from working a 12-hour, you know, hustling all day. And I was in the back roads, really scenic, but very country back roads. And no light, driving along, and it's raining, it's pouring. It's like a 1 in the morning. And my tire just busts out. And I remember stopping, found the only street light, like, it happened to be right there. Hey, go figure, right? Positive. I didn't want to be in the dark. But I remember just getting out, just kind of laughing, just smiling. I was like, you know what? I've been in worse situations. Let me just change this tire. We'll move on. But to answer your question, again, how I think, you know, so many things are prayer, 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 prayer. Well, that's a form of witchcraft. If you really break it down, we're all witches. We're all psychics in some format. You know, practice makes perfect. Or I guess maybe that's a bad way to put it, but practice, practice, practice. And if someone is, say, in this negative 50 or perceived negative 50, whatever the case may be, they're in a funk and they've been in it for a while. I think there's a few components that that could take place. They could be their own witch at this point. They could master the junk around them and literally keep them in that perpetual state because they're not changing, they're not flipping the script. Or there could be a man-made kind of, and I would even use the word demon, man-made demon or man-made monster of some sort, entity that could very well be utilizing and draining the energy. And then that's a different category. Almost goes with a form of possession, which, strangely enough, you've all been around energy vampires, I'm sure. I think that's common. Similar fact. You take away the vessel, you create the monster consciously scenario.
They're called narcissists. Then,
oh my gosh. Oh my God. You know what? I think you just blew my mind right there, because I ran into one about a year ago. Multiple, especially in the dating world. But this one is a male, and he came up to me. He's very excited, very enthused with ghost hunting, and does his own stuff. And he just wanted to talk with me. But as soon as he stepped into my bubble, and maybe I was drained from doing what I was doing, you know, previous months, but I couldn't make eye contact with him. I felt almost sick. I felt more tired. I had to sit down. Like, it was like, dude, like, way too much something. It was eye-opening, to say the least. But then there's invisible versions of that, I feel. And again, whether we create that or assume that's there and then it slowly manifests, I think that can be a real scenario. And by some of those scenarios, say there is someone who's really in this dark place and they're not getting out, whatever the case may be, whether they say, oh, whatever, at least my lights are on, they go off. In that case, you may want to get some game players. And what I mean by that is, if it's a demonic scenario, you may want to call someone who handles demonic energy. Not to validate, you know, any religious scenarios. That's, you know, not really what I'm doing. But again, we create the game board. So if we said that there's a crazy, massive satanic demon, whatever the case may be, here, most likely there's something that manifested up in that version, however we interpret it, and it's smart to play with the right tools and not just send in, just some run and gun saying, oh, demons don't exist, oh, this doesn't exist, and they go in and they get slammed because they're not playing with the rules. I'm not saying that it does or it doesn't, but the energy is definitely there. And that's why I actually don't create rules when I do scenarios. And I don't really do protection spells either, because and people find it so controversial. But I tell people, why give the energy or an entity a reason to break in, to get you? I go, I don't. I just, confidence, conviction, confidence in my action, and then conviction in my words. Same thing that priest would do in a scenario. Yeah, I just don't allow that to impact me. And it's actually helped me pretty well until I did walk into a scenario that I was a cocky ghost hunter a little more than a year ago.
And
I knew better. I preached, you know, blah, 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 blah. I now do have a blessed ring on me. It's for those moments, and I always carry, I always have it with me. It's, you know, it's for those moments where I have to play the game board right. So I have a piece on me, and I gotta play it smarter, because what I was, me and the team were encountering was a little heavier than I anticipated, and it impacted me in a unique way. So that was a first. I'm still on board with kind of, you know, everything that I, you know, where I walk, and I don't do necessarily protection spells, but like metals and stuff like that, given the scenario, given the rare scenario, those type of cases aren't everywhere. They're incredibly rare. But better safe than sorry in a lot of cases. The energy itself and what can manifest in scenarios in the dark, those are very real. And when people finally awake to that, terrifying, terrifying for them.
It probably doesn't matter if it's something that one believes is a spawn from hell or just something really negative. At the end of the day, if it's doing the same shit, it doesn't really matter necessarily its origins. If it has the same abilities and powers, it is what it is. And if seemingly the rules of that negative entity are being played on a religious board because that's the belief system where it came in, I get it. It makes more sense to go into the game, you know, if it's Candyland, that you have the little person that's a Candyland, please play Candyland, versus going in with, you know, a bowling pin or something. Like the wrong thing for the game.
Absolutely. And it's like the Ouija board. A lot of people are terrified of the Ouija board, negative context. Ouija board is actually safer than a lot of devices I utilize, but a lot of people don't know that it's important to open a session and close a session and keep, you know, don't pull in a negative intent. If the conductor has a negative intent that something crazy, scary is going to happen, well, most likely things can go south. So that's a, and then of course that manifestation of the mass consciousness kind of going together. And now, hey, you're creating Slender Man or whatever.
Yeah. And that's interesting. And that was something we kind of touched on a little bit on the last show. And a concept that I have brought up to a lot of people over the last 2 years, because I find it very fascinating. And I believe that it's a thing, is, you know, the idea of us, I almost call it haunting ourselves. With our own energy, where it's kind of the concept of, okay, let's say you are, you go into a house, you buy a new home, and you knew the previous owners, it was like a murder suicide, something horrible happened there. Okay. Right. So there's probably a lot of negative energy that was existing in the home for a long period of time leading up to that incident. And now the people are gone. It's cleaned up. There's new paint. Joanna Gaines put up shiplap everywhere. And there's fresh baked goods on the kitchen table. Looks lovely. But then you start to kind of realize there's some negative energy here. And let's say one of the people, let's say it wasn't a murder-suicide. Let's say it was just a murder. Let's say the murderer survived. Or even that there's no murder. It's just a horribly abusive situation and both people are out of there now. But they're both alive, because that's a big point to this. They're not dead. Their energy, why would it take for them to die at a different location for then that energy to start reappearing or manifesting itself in that house? Hasn't that imprint already been made, and it doesn't take someone dying on the other part of the country for that sort of activity to begin in that house?
Yeah, the impact, the echo's already been created. And if you got parties you know, talking locally in the neighborhood about that, you know, there could be a swirl of something potential, and that creation can happen. And maybe something completely new is created.
Yeah.
Based on the idea, the tribute of what happened in that location.
And I think what's scary about that concept of something being created is the idea that it can grow in intelligence. I mean, to talk about that a little bit, and the idea of, okay, so we've created this manifestation. There's this rumor that there's this ghost or Slender Man, as you know, we talked about that, where it, you know, there's this rumor that this is out there. It's a legend. It's folklore. But then people actually start experiencing things connected to the lore of whatever it is. Is that something that can take on a mind of its own just by being there? Or does it, do other things get attracted to it? And then that's what gives it its fuel? Or is it just the energy of people talking about this lore that gives it some sort of fuel to gain consciousness?
Well, you know, just like a deep, and I like using prayer because I think it's such a good example. You know, you're on the pew, you're at service. Everyone bows their head and does that mass prayer. It's almost the same intensity of that, where, and it can be even done passively. I mean, that's the thing that a lot of folks I don't feel understand. A lot of this stuff is passive. You might not think you're putting a lot of impact on a scenario, but you're probably adding to it. At least through concept. But yeah, it just takes a couple of ideas to, I feel, to create that scenario. And there's been stories or conversation about hauntings, and hauntings are just loops or playbacks in the past. They tend not to enter. They don't interact. They're not supposed to, according to definition. So residual hauntings, specifically, well, they can turn, there's stories of them turning intelligent in time. Well, that's because, you know, people are getting in there, they're getting their ideas with this. And next thing you know, this thing that occasionally happens rare, starts in more. So now it's almost like your greatest AI.
Yeah.
If you think about it like that, it is fascinating. And yeah, we could create off lore these monsters, you know, Slender Man. We can even go Bigfoot. We can go dragons. You know, back in the day, there was a lot of talk of dragons. Who to say that they weren't out there, at least through people's minds? They probably saw dragons. It's just, you know, if there's a group of them, they might all identify that dragon or perceived it differently.
That wraps up our first part of our conversation with Aaron G. Thompson. Part two, we'll dive deeper into our conversation about all of these very interesting topics, including, did something demonic attach itself to Aaron during an investigation? Can someone cast negative energy onto another without them even knowing it, almost like a curse? Does Aaron think the negative effects of the pandemic had an effect just beyond the cause and effect of being isolated? Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that part of the conversation. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.